Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the easiest ever edition of the Macko and Cos podcast. We have so much content from the Leafs, the Raptors, Tiger Woods. Bob is packing for a vacation. Matt went to the most expensive restaurant, maybe in Canada, on Friday night. There is so much to talk about. Hi, Bob.
I like calling this the easy edition. Yeah. First of all, thank you to you for making your way over to the city to do it from my place, because we're just on the way out the door, pretty much. As soon as we're wrapped up the podcast, we're going to zip up the suitcases and then head up north. And I have to say, Matt already started the corruption of my daughter early.
I did.
That he sits her down and he's like, okay, Charlotte, so remember, when you go up north, you're not going north. You're cottaging.
That's right.
And you can see, like, in her mind, she's taking notes. Good. I'm learning.
And then the next step is you've got to, when you add the geographical qualifier, then it's you up the level of debaggery or snobbery, whatever you want.
So case in point,
I told her, you're not just cottaging, I'm cottaging up in the Muskokas. So that is the key next step.
Now, technically not true in our case, because we're not in the Muskokas. We're in the Kawarthas.
But it's close enough. Deerhurst, Huntsville.
We're Muskokas adjacent.
Yeah, you're 15 minutes north of the Muskokas. So I think you can pull that off.
At first, I was like, Charlotte, don't listen to him. Ignore that man in the purple shirt. But then I thought, well, wait a minute. What if she does get rich?
Yeah.
I'm in line for a sweet payday. So yeah, listen up, kiddo.
Yeah.
Well, don't learn from me.
No.
You'll just get more of this.
Yeah,
he says, sweeping his arm across the living room with the debris.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what? Your place is not as chaotic as I expected. Packing, leaving today, you know, and just your general you. I was expecting a little bit more chaos, but this is it's pretty good.
We're doing okay.
Yeah.
I got over being sick, and you know, there's two ways to be sick. Mm. You get those crazy flus that come in and out like a summer storm.
Yeah.
Where you're insanely sick for about 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're kind of okay after that.
Yeah.
You're sort of tired, a little winded, you've been through a lot, but you're sort of okay. And then there's the other one, like the guest that won't leave.
Yeah.
The lingerer.
And that's what you had.
It was just the worst. It came rolling in on I was actually at a mass on Monday night.
Yeah.
Like, it was a commemorative mass for my father-in-law. And I was standing in the pew. And churches are pretty disorienting places to begin with. You know, a lot of crucifixion, a little incense, a lot of chanting. My head's just spinning. And I wound up sitting in the car for 2 hours. Because couldn't exactly leave the ceremony. I mean, it was my father-in-law's one-year mass. So
yeah.
It was a very solemn occasion for our family. But I knew that I could not be in a room of 200 Italians, sick as I was. Because even the first one I saw was, hey, how you doing? It's hugging and kissing.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, look, like, honestly, you're just kissing a vial of Ebola right now.
You're
like,
the monkey from Outbreak.
Exactly.
And they're all Patrick Dempsey.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You ever seen Contagion?
I haven't, actually.
That's the one by Steven Soderbergh, right?
Yeah.
Gwyneth Paltrow is Patient X?
Yeah.
That's actually pretty good.
Is it?
It's pretty good.
Is it as good as Outbreak?
Outbreak's the best. Okay, you know what?
Yeah.
We got a lot of sports to get to, but we're going to sidebar right here into disease movies.
Yeah. It's like, what I love about Outbreak, think about how many Oscar winners and nominees in that movie. Donald Sutherland, Morgan Freeman, Dustin Hoffman, Cuba Gooding Jr., who won the Oscar.
Rene Russo at the peak of her powers.
Rene Russo is great in that movie. Kevin Spacey, two-time Oscar winner. Like, that movie was packed with stars.
It's so weird because it's a schlocky B movie with a Hollywood A-list.
Yeah.
So it feels like art, but it also feels like a Steven Seagal movie at the same time. It's really hard to know what movie you're watching when you watch Outbreak. The arty version of it is Contagion. That's the one that Steven Soderbergh did.
Yeah.
And that's quite good.
Mm-hmm.
But Outbreak retains this heart of cheese.
It's so rewatchable.
It is so rewatchable.
Yeah.
In fact, it's better on repeated viewings, really.
Yeah.
It's kind of like leftovers, like the turkey meal that's even better the next day.
Yeah. If it's on, I'm watching at least one or two segments, because usually it's on AMC and then it goes to commercial break and there's like 7 minutes of commercials. But
what's the stupidest pet that people actually have?
Ferret.
Ferret seems like the winner. I don't know why anyone would want a monkey.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't think people really have monkeys. I think that's just illegal, right?
I don't think you're allowed to own a monkey.
Yeah.
But you can own a ferret. By the way, who decides? Who's the one, like, who's the committee that gets to decide what animal is fine?
Is there an application process for which animals can become pets?
There must be, because then you get those nutty people that want, like, Komodo dragons or pythons or things like that.
But they're allowed, right? Like, so why not Komodo dragons, but why can you have a 12-foot snake?
Yeah, I don't know. No one should be able to own a 12-foot snake.
Right. I can have scorpions and spiders, but only certain kinds of spiders. Like, if I can have a tarantula, why can't I have a black widow?
See, you shouldn't be able to have either. I don't think tarantulas. Here's my rule. Okay, I just thought of this.
Okay.
If this
Here's my rule. I just thought of it. Well, that sounds promising.
If this, and I'm going to give this to good old Doug Ford, when he's the new leader of Ontario. If this animal can kill you, you can't have it as a pet. Just that simple.
But then you couldn't have a dog.
Except for dogs. That's it. It's the one amendment.
I see the PC party is in good shape.
Yeah. Could be worse. Maybe not. Well, Moving on.
Guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
I was listening back to some of the pods while I was sick because, yep. God, I listened to a lot of podcasts. What else are you going to do, right?
Yeah.
You're holed up in the house. You can't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like the two of us, then, God, the beginnings of these pods are really, really meandering. Yeah. If you do like the two of us, then I suppose there's some... I don't know.
But if you're listening, charm, you probably like us.
I hope so.
Yeah.
But this is the openings to these pods, Matt, are all or nothing propositions. I listened, I thought, wow, we're 11 minutes in and we're still rambling about nothing. How far in are we right now?
6 minutes and 40 seconds.
All right. So basically 7 minutes in.
Yeah.
On the tail end of the most exciting weekend in Toronto sports in recent memory.
Yeah.
And we've talked about Outbreak.
How to cottage. How to cottage. Proper cottaging. My rules on owning pets, and we haven't even gotten to it. At some point we will. I went to the number one like steak joint, maybe in Canada. It's called Jacob's. It's on like Queen and Brant. Oh, God, it's the place where it has like $780 steak, like the Wagyu. It's like for in, for like, you know.
Okay, 40, save it. Yeah, save it.
Yeah,
let's get to it later.
We'll get it later. Okay.
So should we do Raptors or Leafs or Jays or Tigers?
Okay, first off, not Jays. Jays, all it is apathy. By the way, I heard
that's
today,
not true. The prospects look good. Anthony Alford looks good. Bichette looks good. Guerrero looks good.
I heard today. Here was the news we got from our one of our Blue Jays beat guys. Let's see, Marcus Stroman.
Oh, I knew you were going to say Stroman.
Marcus Stroman's feeling better. Okay, Tulo might go on the 60-day DL, and Donaldson is dealing with dehydration. Blue Jays baseball. I'm sorry. Right now, Bob. Between Raptors, who are going to go to the NBA Finals, Leafs, who beat the Penguins, Tiger, who's back, March Madness, Sunday at Masters, and HBO documentary on Andre the Giant coming out in April. I don't have any room for the Blue Jays. None. No room, Blue Jays. You're out.
Okay. And that's fair.
Yeah.
They all rolled over and one fell out.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So let's get into the Raptors then, because we should definitely talk.
Yep.
I'm not a big fan of symbolic wins. Mm-hmm. You're not a big fan of symbolic wins. They're fun at the time, but really to put any kind of genuine meaning into them, yeah, it's more of an emotional exercise than an intellectual one.
Yeah.
But this particular Houston game felt different.
Mm-hmm.
Had we lost this game, and I'm going to use we freely because I feel like I've earned it.
If they lose four in a row, it's them. But they've won like eight in a row, and they won five games in one calendar week. So it's we and us.
Oh, my nervous system's so dialed into their results that I might as well say we. All right, so it was the way they won was heartening. They won with defense from two of their best players, but not necessarily best defenders.
Yep.
JV and DeMar, mm-hmm, really buckled down.
Yes, they did.
And they were able to limit the threes from Houston. You know, Houston was going to get theirs. They have too many weapons. It's impossible to hold that team down. But they actually played good perimeter defense.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, they did. They were running out of position, forcing them to take other shots. And listen, Harden still got 40. But if you watch how much they defer to Harden, it's not a shock at all they got 40.
They basically told Houston, beat us from the mid-range.
Yeah.
We dare you to not be who you are, which is, of course, the either a post, a feast or famine. You're either in the post, the threes, or nothing in between.
Yeah. Here's, okay, both these statements can be true. The Raptors deserve to win, but the Raptors got damn lucky. Mm-hmm. The Raptors are the best team in the East, but their offense in the final couple minutes still scares me. Mm-hmm. All of these things are true. If Chris Paul hits that corner three,
that's the big one.
Maybe it's a different game because that was super late, tight game.
That would have tied the game.
Yeah. So, and he didn't. He missed. The biggest positive for me was Valanciunas. Because Valanciunas doesn't usually play late in games. And usually if he does, you're playing Charlotte. You're playing some team that's got like bigs. So Valanciunas can match up. That's not Houston. Houston's, you know, taking 45 threes, running team. What did he do in the last couple of minutes? Blocks Clint Capella. Then near the end, inbound pass, bad inbounds pass. He has enough athleticism to fight to get the ball because it was almost stolen. And then he hit two critical free throws. I know he had one turnover, but Valanciunas belonged on the court, and you can see that the coaching staff trusts him.
And he's earned that trust.
Yeah.
And it's a long time coming. You know,
long time.
Think back even going years now, people were like, why aren't they using JV more? And then they kind of did. And you could see in the fourth quarter, he was getting shredded on the defensive end. And even though he could give you offense, he was giving up more than he was getting.
Yeah.
And that no longer feels true. And that is so important. You know what really dawned on me in this Houston game? I'm glad you brought up JV because I think you're bang on about him being the most important takeaway from that game.
Yeah.
Is the Raptors have been in search of that elusive third for so long. And we kind of thought maybe it'll be Serge Ibaka.
No. Nope.
It's not going to be Serge Ibaka.
He loves getting booted out of games. He's an angry fella this year.
He does seem scrappy, doesn't he? He's just scrapping. So maybe JV is elevating his game to the point where he may not be your ideal third.
No.
But he's not an incomplete third either. That third option in a game where you can say, okay, my two superstars, I know they're going to key on them. But I need somebody else who can step up and play a powerful game.
Yeah.
And he just might be that guy now.
Oh, yeah. He looked great out there.
And really did.
And here's the thing. Big picture. And by the way, Lowry and DeRozan scored 53 combined points. You want your stars to be stars.
And especially now, Lowry now. He hasn't really been dominant this year.
He hasn't been. Actually, that's one of the things. The last 3 years, it was Lowry's team. It's now DeRozan's team. Like, the mantle has been passed. It's now DeMar DeRozan's team.
But you can see how that when Lowry is hitting from outside, it totally changes how this team's work.
Everything.
Like, just that. And against the Knicks yesterday, too. Like, his ability to just step into shots and hip them totally changes the way you have to defend them coming across center.
Yeah. The best big picture is, here's the thing. The Raptors are the best team in the East, and the Raptors are going to the NBA Finals. Period. Mm-hmm. I have just. And here's the thing. If you don't want to believe in it, that's fine. But the question is, what has to happen? Is it simply you won't believe in the Raptors until they actually, you know, win a series in five? Because they've done everything you can ask of them. They've done everything. They've blown out Boston and Cleveland. They've hung in tough with Golden State. They just beat Houston. And Houston had like one foul in the fourth quarter. Didn't their first foul call until 46 seconds left.
They have a 600 winning percentage against teams above 500 this year. So it's not just that they're blowing out crappy NBA teams.
Which they are. Yeah.
But there's a lot of teams that are now at the beginning phase of the process. And there's a lot of easy wins on the circuit. But they're playing 600 ball against teams that are actually winning. And so the quality of competition, they've been up to it.
Yeah, they have been. And on the other side, Cleveland. Whoa. 6-6 since they made all those roster changes, which were supposed to rejuvenate. We don't know when Kevin Love is coming back. There is no Kyrie Irving on this team. I am so confident that the Raptors, if they play Cleveland, will beat them. I'm going in like with a dangerously high level of confidence, which might come back to bite me in the ass, but I don't give a bleep. The Raptors deserve my confidence.
It's not exactly LeBron's Zdrunas Ilgauskas and the rest of the gang from back in the
day.
But it's getting it's closer to that.
Right now, who's the second best player on the Cleveland Cavaliers?
Jordan Clarkson?
Sure. Why not? Sure. Larry Nance Jr.?
Maybe.
Every now and then Tristan Thompson? Think about it. Who's the second best player, Rodney Hood, on Cleveland? Like, with all the really good teams...
It would be Kevin Love if he was in the lineup. That would be easy.
But he's a couple more weeks out, fractured hand. Then let's see. Maybe he will be. Maybe he'll go back to being that guy, and then it's a different conversation.
So your point is well taken, that as great as he is, he's going back to being LeBron on the island, where he's just not surrounded by the talent. We'll have to see. We can get cocky about it, but when Kevin Love comes back, you're getting an all-star who can stretch the three, can stretch the offense from the five position, and that's a hell of a thing in the playoffs to deal with. So we'll see.
We'll see.
You know what I find interesting? People are often, rightly so, they comment on how you can't win the NBA championship without an alpha. A true alpha, an MVP caliber player. And you look back over recent history and it's LeBron, KD, Steph, you go back to Boston.
Go back before that. Michael Jordan, Isaiah Thomas, Larry Bird.
We always have the same. There's one team, Matt, and it was the 2004 Detroit Pistons. Didn't really have that superstar. It was Chauncey and Rip Hamilton and...
Rasheed Wallace. Ben Wallace.
They were a great team.
Tayshaun Prince. Like, they had... The difference is... And I was thinking about it. It is close, but the difference is that Pistons team had 4 to 5 all-stars. Not elite, but 4 to 5 all-stars.
Yeah.
The Raptors have 2.
But the point that I was making is it's always been the alpha dog conversation in the NBA. Always and only. Can they surmount that this year? Maybe. I guess we'll see. But maybe they don't have to surmount it because maybe we're just looking at DeMar DeRozan wrong. How far off of the mark of those absolute top players in the NBA is DeMar DeRozan at this point? I mean, he's been a perennial all-star.
Yeah, he's in the second tier.
You know? So if you're a second tier all-NBA player, is that good enough to be considered the kind of player that can win a championship?
If you've got to have other really good things around you, and the Raptors do. They've got a very good coach, great bench, and they've got good play, and Kyle Lowry. So there is plenty around DeMar DeRozan. Here's the inevitability of life. They're going to get to the finals. They're going to go to one game seven throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs, and that's it. And then they're going to get crushed by Golden State. That's my belief. And by the way, that's awesome. That's going to be, it's like April. I can't wait for April. Can't wait for April. It's going to be great.
It's pretty spectacular. We've talked about how the playoffs, when they roll in, we're going to be going back-to-back nights, Leafs, Raptors.
Yeah.
It's going to be insane. And TFC looks great. It's just a really great time in Toronto sports. You know, I got a pet peeve I want to throw out here.
Sure.
With the Leafs doing really well and the Raptors doing especially well, you get back into this conversation of where do the Raptors fit into the Toronto landscape?
Yeah.
And it's always considered that they're the bronze medalists behind the Jays and behind the Leafs.
Yeah.
That's probably true in terms of the bulk numbers. Nobody can deny that. But I almost feel like when people say, you know, Toronto's all into hockey. Toronto's all about hockey. And then I think to myself, well, which Toronto? Which Toronto is all about that? Because I spent a bunch of time in the 905 and out there in the sort of more outlying regions.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people there who love the Raptors and respond to the Raptors in a way that they just don't with the Leafs. And I feel like in some ways we're a bit guilty of this, you know, myopic view because history has always been about the Leafs and there's a kind of a generational love there. But do we forget Jurassic Park? Like, do we forget what happens every single time this team goes into the playoffs and how insane this city becomes for them?
Oh, yeah.
Well, and they haven't even been a dominant team yet.
Which team is not a dominant team?
The Raptors.
Team? The Raptors.
Well, we've never seen the Raptors be a great team.
We've never seen this
The Jays level. Have been a great team.
Yeah.
You know, the Leafs, well, no, but they've got the history.
Yeah.
So let's see what happens. Like, how does this city, it's a lot to ask a team in a new city to have rabid fans when you've never been good.
Yes. I mean, the Leafs will always be number one.
Will they?
Yes. Yeah,
100%. Like in 50 years.
If I'm going to guess, yes.
Yeah, maybe.
But here's the thing. The Raptors, I mean, it's going to be nuts. If the Raptors win the first playoff round in 5, and then in the second playoff round they win game 1, like just, it's going to be nuts in this city. Even just win that first playoff round, just DeRozan and Lowry just be efficient, be stars, then I think it'll change. I think it'll hit another level. And the Blue Jays, just again, it's swimming in a sea of apathy right now. The Raptors are in such a great place.
Is it possible Dwayne Casey is the best Raptor this year?
You can make that argument. Absolutely, you can make that
but
argument.
Thinking a lot about how the development of the bench, like we almost think about them as though they came incomplete, but they're a bunch of kids.
Yep.
They're a bunch of kids that are learning how to play on the fly. And his confidence in them is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, he strikes me as a guy who over the years has been a lean on your veterans guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's completely changed this year. I was watching, you know, because JV was playing really well this weekend, both against Houston and against New York. And yet, if Poeltl came in and was playing well, he'd roll with them.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't go in, obviously, with the Mike Babcock. I'm going to give him this percentage of minutes, and I don't care what he does with them. I'm going to yank him. You know, he didn't have that kind of block mentality.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh,
he's been really creative with his lineups.
He's been great. He's been the best coach. I hear a lot of people saying coach of the year. I think he should be coach of the year. I think everything flipped this weekend for the Raptors in terms of coverage. It flipped. It's, you know, Drake, you know, saying, oh, the streak's going to end. And I was like, shut up. But you win that game. You don't have no trap game against the Knicks. They crush them. Just crushed.
The,
you know,
one bad quarter, and then they just hit hyperspace. They went to ludicrous speed in the spirit of Spaceballs.
Yeah, and Lowry and DeRozan didn't need to play 30 minutes, and they had only 25 points between them because they didn't need to. And they're fine with that. In terms of my ranking, I go DeMar number one, then I go Then I go Dwayne Casey number two. That would be on my list.
And I think I owe apologies to Fred VanVleet. I just assumed he would be too small. And as soon as he started playing well, then other teams would go, oh, we got to kind of scout that guy a little bit. And as soon as they did, they would just shut him down.
Yeah.
And I even made a case, I think it was probably about 2 months ago on the pod, that DeLon Wright was going to be the most important secret weapon Raptor because of all he could bring to that backup guard spot. And I was right about one thing. It was the backup guard spot.
Yeah,
but I was wrong. It was actually Fred VanVleet who's doing all the things I thought that DeLon would do. Late fourth quarter minutes and giving the possibility for Dwayne to go with the three guard set. Fred VanVleet, what's up with that?
I know. What's up with stuff? What's the deal with? Yeah. Oh, no. He's been great. They all have been. Like, there's no one you don't trust.
Norm.
You know. I guess. Yeah. Onwards and upwards. By the way, don't rewatch the last 5 minutes of the Houston game if you want to see well-played offense, because it did not exist. But just a great game. And by the way, you mentioned playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the Leafs are going to be in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
The Raptors are going to be in the playoffs. What if I want playoff tickets, Bob?
What would you do?
Where would you go?
Well, okay, here's the thing. I only have Canadian money, so that I need you to consider that. I can't go spending American money I don't have.
No, and also, we're both Canadian. Why wouldn't we want to support a Canadian-owned and operated company? Whoa, where could you go? Certainly not Ticketmaster. Those jerks. You need to go to one place and one place only. Seat Giant. Playoffs are around the corner. It's going to be concerts. Summer's coming, concert tickets. All you need to do is go to seatgiant.ca, and all the tickets are in Canadian dollars. Yes, in Canadian. It's not like when you're like, oh my God, only $38 for this Raptor ticket, and then boom, it was $49 because it was in American dollars. And remember, Seat Giant, Canadian owned and operated, and guarantees every ticket to be legitimate. But it goes beyond there, Bob. If you like this podcast, and if you're listening, I guess you probably do, go to seatgiant.ca, use the discount code Bob and Matt at checkout, and you will save money. And the great thing is, you, the listener, saves money, and Bob and I get a small kickback of that money to help pay for this podcast. It's win-win, no exchange fees, no bank fees. What you see at checkout is what you pay. Seatgiant.ca, discount code Bob and Matt.
That's a good promo. Yeah. That's a good promo. I got a question for you, Matt.
Yeah.
How do we know if anybody uses the promo code?
We will eventually get, like, at the end of every month, like, an accounting from Seat Giant.
Right. So they basically check themselves to see how much money they owe us.
Yeah.
Do we have any idea whether they're right or wrong?
I have no idea.
Onwards and upwards.
Onwards and upwards.
All right.
SeatGiant.ca.
So, Leafs then.
Mm-hmm.
The Pittsburgh game was damn fun.
Yeah.
It's funny how we all sort of gravitate towards the same panic points at the same time, though, because last week was all the "is Freddie Anderson playing too much" conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he's looking fine, though. And I guess what was so exciting about that game was, well, one, they're Pittsburgh, and we kind of, you and I have both said, they feel like they are going to be a real presence in the playoffs.
I think they're the best team. I think they're going to win the Stanley Cup.
And they certainly, and then if that's the case, then this is a measuring stick type game, and the Leafs passed it with flying colors. The ability for Nazem Kadri to be defensively responsible and a 30-goal scorer, though, might be the most quietly slept on narrative on a team that is combed over time and time again for stories.
Oh, yeah. If you're going to have the, and this is a conversation you have when the team's off for 4 or 5 days, because you got something to talk about. When you start having the what to pay Marner, Nylander, and Matthews conversation, the little tentacle that's just off of that is thank God for Kadri's deal. $4.5 million for like the next 4 years after this year. You're getting a legit second line center that'll get you 25 to 30. And by the way, his first goal was just hard work, forecheck, fought off. I keep saying every now and then on air, he beat off three Penguins. And you take that line out of context and it sounds dirty. So he fought off with aggressive forecheck, fully clothed, many members of the Penguins.
I got to believe that beating off three Penguins is probably illegal in most provinces.
It really is and would be a record. And took him hard into from behind into the boards. But, that's one of the big stories is Kadri. And when they get to salary cap, you love what Kadri brings.
Because he gives you the flexibility to help retain some of those other superstar players.
Yep.
And I say other in the sense that, how important is Kadri on this team? Like, let's do the gold medal, you know, the silver, bronze rankings.
So yeah.
Number one is obviously Auston Matthews.
Yep.
Number two is obviously Freddie Anderson. Or maybe they're interchangeable.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, who is the third most important player? Is it Morgan Rielly? Is it Nazem Kadri?
I think it's
is
Morgan.
It Jake Gardner?
I think it's Morgan Riley's third, Nylander fourth, Marner fifth.
Really? So you don't even put Kadri in the top five?
Oh, God.
Think about it. He's the second line center.
Yeah.
He's ignited Marner as much as Marner has ignited him.
Yeah.
He's defensively responsible. He's played a lot of tough minutes over the year. And he's still going to emerge with, 30-plus goals. And I think cap hit matters. And to your point, 5.5.
Then catches more. 4.5. Yeah. If you do,
it's a pittance.
If you do cap, yeah. Then when you include that, then yeah, I'd say Kadri's more important than Marner.
Man, what a reclamation project with this guy. Think about the beating that he took under the Dave Nonis regime.
Yep.
It felt like every other day, Dreger was on TSN 1050 talking about how they hadn't any confidence in this guy. Mm-hmm. What were the deals going to look like for him? He was out of town so many times and reviled for, I don't even know why, but even under Ron Wilson, like Ron Wilson didn't know what to do with him. I give Mike Babcock a lot of credit and Shanahan and his group.
Yep.
They reclaimed this guy's career and he has paid them back many times over.
Oh yeah. And it's always the interesting conversation with Kadri. How much of it is on Babcock and Shanahan and how much of it's just, he got older, maybe got smarter, like he was immature. When they suspended him 3 years ago, it's not like they wanted to. Obviously he had, they acknowledge it's not just about him being late. So there was immaturity. There was stuff he was not doing. He was not pulling his weight.
And it had to be pretty bad. I mean, you think at the end of that season, how much they just wanted to limp to the end of the season with no more scandals after mm-hmm. Salutegate and Shanahan pulling out his
jerseys,
unbelievably thick Irish black hair.
Yeah.
They did not want to engage the Toronto media with another scandal, especially something they couldn't talk about.
Yeah.
Think about it. You and I were on the air when that broke. I remember. Do you actually remember who was our next guest?
No.
It was, it wasn't Sheldon Keefe from the...
You really shouldn't, dude. You remember.
From the AHL.
You made it sound
It was somebody from the AHL, though. Who was the coach before Sheldon Keefe?
I think it was Sheldon Keefe.
No. Before him, though.
Oh, God. I'd have to look it up. I don't...
Jeez, I don't even remember now. Anyway, it was AHL Marley's coach came on. And basically, this Kadri story cracked, and we had to talk to him about it. We got in trouble for that. Do you remember?
Yes.
Yeah, the Marleys were not happy that we had their coach on to talk about this scandal, which gives you an indication how much that organization did not want to talk about this in public.
Oh, God, yeah. And by the way, how many times when it's the... you always hear that story about, oh, the team's not happy with you that you asked this question. It's like, oh,
right. Yeah, I know. Whatever. What am I supposed to do? It's my job.
Yeah.
So exactly. I guess my point is that without that wake-up call, who knows if he gets the message?
Yeah.
It had to be pretty drastic. They were throwing him to the wolves. They protected him. I think they actually protected him in a way that, like, say, the Jets never protected Evander Kane.
Yeah.
Because they actually liked him.
Yeah.
And they just saw a young kid who was screwing up.
Well, I mean, which also goes to show you that, you know, obviously he'd done enough to earn that respect and just didn't get... Gord Dineen!
That's okay. Who it was. Thank you, buddy. Gord Dineen was the guest we had.
Yeah, I wasn't paying attention.
I never would have remembered
Gord Dineen.
Yeah, good guy.
Yeah, Gordo. Yeah. Thanks, Gord. Sorry about that, buddy. Good job by Gord Dineen. So, and Kadri, 2 goals. The only thing I'll say, and Bob, I'm surprised you haven't done this. The only concern, Pittsburgh, 65% possession, well outshot the Maple Leafs. On the other hand, but the Leafs won without Austin Matthews, and it was a classic Leafs win. They're so skilled offensively, they don't need a lot of shots to score goals. Anderson played great, and total shout out to the penalty kill. 3 for 3. And the one thing the Penguins do is they score on the power play. So much like Toronto, the Raptors, that win against Houston, you know, gives them a little emotional boost, a little confidence in the memory bank. We got that there. Same thing for the Leafs. Like, okay, yep. We beat the best team in the East, arguably, without Austin Matthews. Just little things for the memory bank.
Benchmarks. Emotional wins. Oh. Big wins. The thing about possession, I guess I'm just coming to grips with the fact that the Leafs are a quick strike team. And yes. I know that this is a terrible cliche, but on defense, they're going to have to be bend, don't break.
Yep.
And where they're really going to succeed is if they can make... They can take opportunities to create turnovers and then strike fast through the neutral zone, and that's where they can mobilize their speed. They're going to have to play that speed game. It's all about getting out of your own zone quickly. I mean, these are all cliches. It's the modern NHL.
Yeah.
But they are suited to play that modern NHL game.
Yeah.
There's a great point that was made, actually, about I was listening to Jeffy Merrick talk about the Buffalo Sabres, and
Let me guess. Probably their minor league system.
No,
Jeff started talking about something.
No. Well, it did come up, but he mostly stuck to...
Fourth line center. Burr, burr, burr. Here's my 31 thoughts. Shut up, Jeff. And 30 other thoughts about Merrick. All shut up.
That's a good one. His point was, it was weird because in this rebuild, they just seem to be going for these big players that are going to grind it out and win the physical game. And, and you know, I give the Leafs a lot of credit. Under Nonis, you could still see that there was this obsession with getting the Freddie Gauthiers.
Yeah.
And the, you know, I mean, to their credit, they did get Nylander. But, you know, there was still this size obsession. Mm-hmm. And the Leafs just aren't there right now. They're building for the modern NHL.
And you might as well, because, you know, think about the amount. Okay, here's why you can tell the Leafs are going the right way. You know what conversation you're not having as much? Hits from behind, hits from the head. Those sort of conversations, they're going away.
You mean like the generic conversations?
Just the generic conversations. You have those generic conversations when there's a spate of it, where it's happening all the time. When it's like, oh, all this physical play, guys are getting hurt. You're not hearing that as much. Now you're hearing more about goaltender interference. That just might be because it's happened to Toronto a couple times. But that's also more about speed and skill because you're going towards the goalie. So the Leafs are in the right spot because the game is changing. It's not just about big behemoth deck the other big behemoth.
Although it is funny, though, when you watch the organization internally even struggle with that mandate because, you know, you go and you get a Matt Martin and you can see that.
There's still some of that.
It's not entirely done. Wait,
you know who Matt Martin is?
No, who's Matt Martin?
He's Nicorette. It's like you've quit smoking, but you still got a bit of that Jones. You know, you're not going to. So Matt Martin is like, I'm going to take a wad of Nicorette. I still need a little bit of that in me.
You and I have worked together on and off for 20 years.
Yeah.
And you remember me when I was a smoker. Mm-hmm. And do you have you ever noticed that I always walk around with a pen in my hands?
I don't know if I did.
You may not notice, but if you pay attention, I always have a pen either in my hands or nearby.
Yeah.
And I find I just need to flip something.
Yeah.
So that's my Matt Martin Nicorette.
Yeah, that's
my spinning pen.
So there you
go. We all got them, right?
Yeah.
We all got them. You know what was the really interesting Leafs conversation this week? It wasn't even the Pittsburgh game. It was the, you know, once Ron Francis gets booted upstairs in Carolina and there's an opening there, what the hell you're going to do with Kyle Dubas?
Yep.
You know, Mark Hunter, Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah.
That is all clearly coming to a head.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems pretty obvious to me that Kyle Dubas is not long for this team.
Or that they got a plan. They got a plan for either Dubas or Hunter. The Maple Leafs, and I don't know the management structure of every team, but the Maple Leafs management structure seems weird. You've got the Godfather, who's 75 years old. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of general managers of that age. Then below that, you've got two assistant general managers, both with the title, both who have a 23-year difference between Mark Hunter and Dubas, both who do very different things very well and contribute very different things to the organization. So you've got this very odd triangle. And
it's a quadrilateral if you consider Brandon Prudhomme.
Then you throw in, Brandon Prudhomme a little below that. Then Shanahan and his job, and Babcock has some influence.
Quite a bit of influence. Yes. I think you make a really good point. I mean, really,
they've got a
hexagon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's
It is weird. And I think it's coming to a head. Like, one of the smart things they did, really smart, was they figured, okay, we got a salary cap on the ice, but we don't have a salary cap in other places. And this new regime under Shanahan has been fantastic about mobilizing the economic might of this organization to give themselves better chances to win.
Yeah.
Invest more deeply in scouting. Invest more deeply in smart people who are going to come up with new and good ideas.
You take David Clarkson, we'll find a way to fit the bill.
Like, so smart, that's because you bring Prudhomme in, who's a genius at working the cap, worked at the league for a long time. But that's how those things pay off. Eventually, though, the check comes to the table. And now you've got a young gun in Kyle Dubas, who clearly is going to be an NHL GM.
Yes.
Clearly. Either in Toronto or somewhere else. He's too good at what he does not to be given a chance by somebody. You got Mark Hunter. Calling, Matt?
Oh, that's Amy.
What you want to say? Do you want to take it?
Hold on.
Take
a second. Hold on. Let's put her on speaker.
Put her on speaker.
All right. Hold on. Amy? You're on the podcast.
Oh, no, I'm on the other podcast. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye, baby.
Okay, bye, guys. Happy party.
Bye, Amy.
Bye.
Bye.
You have a very delicate ring.
Well, I don't want like a really angry ring, like shaking me around all the
time. Yeah, but that one's like kind of gentle.
Yeah.
Shouldn't there be at least a little urgency?
No, I heard it.
I couldn't even tell if it was just a text coming.
I heard it.
The best
case scenario for the Maple Leafs is this. Lou Lamoriello takes a consultant job. You're 75, you know, and then Dubas or Hunter. I don't know which one is better. The only thing I can say is Colorado was actively wanted to interview Dubas, and they got denied permission. Has any NHL team reached out to Mark Hunter to interview him to be the next general manager?
It's a great question. The fact that we even know a little bit about Dubas's Colorado situation is amazing because they're so good at keeping stuff in the cone of silence.
Well, they can be, but Colorado can speak out.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, I can keep a secret. Can you?
Yeah.
Joe Sakic?
Yeah.
Wink, wink. At some point, you have to let your talent go. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it is. I remember working on a whole bunch of TV shows and thinking, you know, you hire people, but if they're really good, in 2 or 3 years, they're either going to want promotions or they're going to want to leave.
Yeah.
And that's just what it is.
That's life.
That's life. That's the nature of turnover. So as long as... See, it's funny, what promises can you make to young talent to stick around? Lou Lamoriello was older, but he also is clearly not going anywhere. He is the Hyman Roth of NHL GMs. He feels like he's going to be a GM till he's 100 years old. And if he can do it, God bless him.
The man traded away Phaneuf, and they didn't have to retain any salary a couple of years ago. And he brought in Frederik Andersen.
You know, I thought the Freddie, but he also signed Zaitsev.
Yeah.
He also signed Matt Martin.
Okay, we'll see. Zaitsev.
So here's my question with Lou. There are huge questions that are coming up for the Leafs in terms of contracts and distributing salaries coming up. And you saw how in Edmonton they got screwed when they gave Leon Draisaitl the wrong contract.
Yeah.
And you can screw up a pretty sweet situation pretty fast with a bunch of bad moves. You know, trading Taylor Hall doesn't look like such a good idea right now,
does
it?
Not so good, Al.
Not so good, Al. So do you want Lou making these deals? Because the most important decisions in the modern Leafs history, you know, how do you retain all those guys? This is the hard part, right?
It is.
And do you want Lou making those decisions?
I don't have an answer for that.
Do you want Dubas making those decisions? Do you want him negotiating for the first time with those big tickets?
Well, I want to keep Prudhomme there. I feel like Dubas, just because when all a bunch of other teams are interested in you, that says something about how the rest of the league views you as a current assistant general manager and your potential. Throw as much money as you can. Keep the band together as long as possible. And then eventually give the reins probably to Dubas.
Can Babcock work with Dubas? The interesting thing about Lou Lamoriello is he kind of keeps Babcock in check as much as you can.
Yeah.
Because I have a feeling Babcock could be the ego that completely spills over the entire organization. You know, he couldn't really do it in Detroit just because you knew Ken Holland was never getting fired.
Yeah.
But he's a really powerful presence. And I don't think he can bully Lou, but it'd be interesting to see what he would do with a first-time GM like Dubas.
Yeah, it's well, then that...
Or Hunter, for that matter.
Then that's on Shanahan. That's on Shanahan to keep the ship running.
Do you have a prediction?
Prediction is that it'll be Dubas. That's a prediction.
My prediction is it'll be Lou Lamoriello bridge contract. Dubas leaves. Hunter is the GM in waiting. He takes over in 2 years.
All right. So we got very different ones there. One final shout out to Babcock, and then we'll move on. I loved when they lost to the Buffalo Sabres. The fifth goal, clearly goaltender interference, wasn't called. And Babcock said, we got to fix this. This is a major problem. Got to get this fixed for the playoffs. Then against the Penguins, which should have been 3-1, goaltender interference on Dumoulin. And suddenly, soon after that, it's 4-0 after Marner scores on the power play. And Babcock's like, yeah, I don't know what's going on. Just very, very different messaging. Good job by Babcock. He's playing the results.
So. Oh, I got the. I want to play the game with you where I throw in a random comparison that you have to make to Jeff Pollock, our lawyer, when you do the promo. But before we do that,
yeah,
we don't have a lot of time left, I'm sure.
No, and we got to get to my steak story.
And we got to talk about the steak story. So come on, Maddie. You went to Canada's most expensive steakhouse this weekend?
Jacobs. Went there, on Friday night. First off, it's the most expensive. Like, just here's my summary. The amount that you have to pay is more than you should have to ever pay to go to a restaurant unless you're super rich. But if you are going to pay an inordinate amount of money, it should look like how it did. It should taste the way it did. And the service should be the way it was. And we don't get paid by, this is not any sort of infomercial, but the shrimp and even the bread before, and we had this like Wagyu steak and this one from Argentina and this one from Idaho. Almost every bite I took, Bob, I started smiling and I was confused. Like what's going on in my stomach and my mouth? I'm so happy. At one point, I was shimmying like Antoine Walker hitting the three-pointer. Like, I just take a bite, like, ooh, like literally cha-ching at the dinner table. Every bite was so delicious.
All right, so forgive me if I missed this, but what cut did you get?
Well, we got one, a Wagyu ribeye, I think, or I don't even remember.
So did you divide up a whole bunch? Like, did you get a bunch
four
and then
different
cut them
steaks
up?
For four different guys, and we tried a little bit of all of them.
So you did the sampler.
So, yeah, so like some sirloin, some ribeye, strip loin, and the Wagyu, whatever the hell it
so
is.
Okay, so Wagyu, was it that much better than everything else?
Yes.
Really?
Here's the crazy thing. They showed us the meat. We could go to the meat locker to look at it all. And
you know, like when they show you the wine?
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I love when they show you the meat.
Oh, yeah.
They get the pointer and they're showing the cuts of meat.
Cuts of meat. And they show you the marbling, you know, the white and, you know, it looks like the marbling. A Wagyu steak looks like the most intricate subway system map.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost all just like crosses everywhere, just white
but
lines.
But thin,
everywhere.
Though, right? Like thin. not thick crosses.
No. But thousands and thousands of little tiny ones.
And I think that means the fat absorbs into the meat uniformly, right?
Yeah, I think so. All I know is it looked different than all the other cuts of meat. It tasted different than all the other cuts of meat. It was more expensive than any other cut of meat. It's a mortgage payment, for Christ's sakes. And it was so good. Ridiculous.
So at that point, like, I've always wondered when you have super expensive cuts of meat. Now, I'm not going to shame you on this one. Because I actually
shamed.
Yeah, no. Yeah. When have you ever shamed when I try? But
shields up.
But like like your expensive ones or whatever.
Yeah.
If you love something and you want to try the best of it.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. There's something interesting about that. You know, it's not like, it's probably overpriced, but it's not the way it's overpriced if you go and get a mediocre $15 burger.
Yeah.
That's just irritating.
Yeah.
But this is the best.
Oh, just getting like an overexpensive beer at a hockey game.
100%, you know, that's an even better example. Like, you're sitting there in the stands, you got to pay $7 for a water.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not like that. So are you reluctant then to like salt it or put any kind of sauce on it? Because you've spent so much for it, you have to experience it on its own.
Bob, I'm going to come over there and I'm going to slap you. I've never used the F word. sauce these steaks? How dare you? I will not hear you insult Jacob's steak.
Like your partner in crime, Landsberg. I've had many steaks with him over the years, and he always gets a little bowl of ketchup on the side. And it doesn't matter how good the steak is. He always ketchups it. And he says, that's how I like my steak.
I would have, like, I'm almost angry even thinking about
it. Would you have, like, tried to drown him in his own ketchup bowl?
Oh, absolutely. Like, right now, I feel like, you know, I will not hear anyone besmirch the good name of Jacob Steak, and then I'm going to slap you and then pistols at dawn. I never even thought about it. All I was doing was just trying to process how good it was. Okay, and I'll just say this was service and we can move on. When we came back to the table after going on our meat excursion, they had put all new napkins, fully, folded and fancy folds, and had cleaned the table. We were gone for like 3.5 minutes. And it was like a fresh new table.
Really?
Crazy.
Like the elves all came in and just freshened everything up.
Yeah, I think.
What were the sides you got? What sides did you get? It's a huge decision when you have a steak. I guess?
Yeah.
You went with baked potato. Okay. And I'm going to guess broccoli.
No broccoli. There was oysters.
Oysters aren't a side. They're an appetizer.
Shrimp cocktail.
Oh, my God. Did you even get anything like a vegetable?
God, shrimp cocktail.
Did you get a vegetable?
We got the duck fat French fries.
Not a vegetable.
The homemade Caesar salad with like real anchovies and stuff was incredible.
Okay, that counts.
Yeah.
Wow, you guys got a lot of food.
Yeah, we did.
How much did this cost?
A lot.
Did you crack $2,000?
Before
booze?
No, we didn't. Do you know why?
Why?
I brought bottles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Corkage?
Yeah.
What was the corkage cost?
50.
Right.
That's the most I've ever paid for corkage.
I bet.
My only negative about Jacob's, the markups on the wine, shameless.
Right. Was it a good list, though?
Great list. Great list.
I would expect that. But. Okay, so what was the secret weapon of the evening before we move on?
The bread was giant. It looked like a big muffin, and you cracked it open because it's a little bit crunchy. And on the inside, it wasn't all pure bread.
Did the steam escape when you cracked it open?
The steam escaped.
Oh, my mouth is
watering.
And
then what did you do to help that steam? The garlic butter.
Oh,
the garlic butter is
so
on
good.
It.
Right? It's funny because I've been A, sick, but also B, on one of my cleanses. Mm. So I haven't had real food about 10 days now.
Yeah.
And this conversation is nuts.
I feel like I'm in the Matrix, like there's two pills.
The Joe Pantoliano. Do you remember the steak he has, though?
Yeah. Like, I feel I now have two existences. The one where I'm in Jacob's and then the rest.
Right. So is this the best steak you ever had?
Yeah.
Sounds like it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's one thing about fancy restaurants with me, and you know I love food, so, you know, really good food that's well-prepared, I don't look down on it.
No.
But maybe this is just my messed up palate, but I don't always, like, distinguish between schlocky meals and how much I love them and what you just described. Like, they're different, and I understand that. But even just going, like, to Apache Burger and getting a great burger and fries.
It's so satisfying.
Right. But I don't know if I like that less than what I would have going to a Jacob's. Like, it's weird, right? Like, in theory, there should be, like, when you drink wine, you can tell the difference, like, your palate between the really great stuff and a great $25 bottle, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't tell the difference between, you know, a $100 steak and a delicious burger from Apache.
But the thing is, sometimes it's not about, like, quality. It's about the satisfaction. And sometimes, like, I've made Kraft dinner and shredded some real cheese, thrown in some bacon, and I've ate it. And I'm like, I am so satisfied right now. Chicken, like, really good chicken wings. And I'm just so satiated and happy. So, yeah, I mean, in that way, the gap isn't that big.
You know what? We really should have done top five steakhouses.
Mm.
I was surprised by this topic, but we've been kind of moving off the top fives.
Oh, no. I got a good top five for
Friday?
Yeah.
It's going to be Friday just because I come back from
you're
cottaging.
You are cottaging up in
on
the
Friday, cottaging, and not the Muskokas.
Yeah.
The Kawarthas. How would you say Kawarthas fancy, or can you even do it just because they're not fancy?
I don't know. Listen, if you got a cottage by water, that's fancy enough for me.
The K's?
The K's.
Can we call them the K's?
The
going up to the K's? The Caws? Oh, the Caws is pretty good.
That's not bad.
Yeah. All right, so here's my challenge for you, because every pod, I challenge you, compare Jeffrey Pollock to something.
Mm-hmm.
Our lawyer, Jeffrey Pollock, compare him to a great steak.
Compare him to a great steak. Let's see. By the way, I'm going to be giving a shout out to his wife, which is going to make me difficult because her name is Evgenia Pollock, and she's like this like whiz accountant, and she's now joined the team because, again, it's a family firm. But how is Jeff Pollock? You know how Pollock's like a, I'm glad you asked. How is he like a steak? It's because he's versatile. Much like a great steak, some like it medium well, some like it as rare as a chef will do it. Same thing with Jeff Pollock. Let's say you need help with litigation. Bam, he's your guy. Let's say you need help with states and trusts, corporate or commercial real estate. Very versatile. But here's the thing. No matter which version you get the best version because it's a local family law firm with a personal touch. I mean, he told me stories about how he was on vacation and he was taking calls from clients on his speakerphone as he was driving to Florida. So he, much like a steak, he also won't let you down. Jeff Pollock at jeffpollock.com. That's with a G. jeffpollock.com, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. And it's not just Jeff Pollock. It's also Evgenia Pollock, as well as wife, who deals with accounting and all stuff for taxes.
So I always give you a rank, like a like a grade at the end of it. I'm going to give this one a B minus.
Yeah.
It was a B until you butchered Evgenia's name at the very end.
I'm sorry. Super nice woman.
Yep. But you know, I thought you did good.
Yeah.
You kind of like you were clearly at the top looking for a way in.
I was looking for a way in. Yeah.
But you know, you did okay. The versatile, the fact that you went through the different ways you could have a steak cooked, I liked it. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't as good as your one last time.
Nope, nope.
It was solid B.
You know what? I don't go hit home runs. Sometimes just get on base and see what the guy behind
OBP,
you can do.
Baby. Yeah, OBP, baby. OBP. You know me. All right. So, Maddie, Tiger Woods and then out.
Yeah, we got like 6 minutes.
Yeah, I didn't watch 1 minute of it.
What?
Not 1 minute.
Oh, my God.
And it's not like I didn't know he was in contention, but here's what I realized about Tiger.
What?
I don't care about Tiger.
What?
I don't care about
you
Tiger.
You don't care about
I
Tiger.
I don't care. Maybe if it was the Masters, I would have to because of the nature of the event. No, this is what I realized. Is after watching what Federer did, and we talked, you know, by the way, you owe me a steak dinner for this, amongst the many steak dinners I've won for you that you've never paid
me back
for.
Many is an odd word, but continue.
Yeah, the Kershaw 25 as well. Yeah. But anyway, so I realized after Federer and winning at Wimbledon, the Australian Open, and his incredible climb back to prominence, and you know just how he did it with so much class and dignity, and I just realized, like Tiger, I couldn't care less about him and his future. He's been so disappointing on so many levels, not just as an athlete, because you know people get hurt. That's not his fault, but just the way he's carried himself over the years, like a petulant child. And I finally got so tired of this guy's act that. To have him come back, you know, everyone's like, oh, it's going to save golf. You know what? There have been enough golfers since then. Maybe they'll never be as great, but they're compelling for their own reasons. So I couldn't care less about Tiger now.
I enjoy when you go all emotional and not factual, because that's what this is.
It is an emotional
reaction. You're not caring about Tiger is really everything to do with Federer, even though Federer didn't have the same impact on tennis that Tiger did.
He's the greatest player of all time. He had a pretty big impact.
Not even close. The third round of the Valspar, whatever it was the highest rated third round of any golf tournament in like 18 years. If you had seen Tiger Woods hitting that 44-foot putt on 17, everyone on planet Earth exploded.
You know what?
It was incredible.
Do me a favor. Don't cite the numbers of like.
I'm going facts. I'm not going emotion.
Kim Kardashian has 7 million Twitter followers, and Ralph Nader has probably about 100,000. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know.
This is not about Twitter. This is about people from all different walks. Like, I saw hockey nerds tweeting about it, basketball people, baseball people. Everyone was in complete awe of that moment, of what Tiger Woods did. And his comeback, and yeah. He's done horrible things, just like a lot of people listening. They cheated on their husbands or wives. Tiger Woods' comeback, it's from he had back fusion. He had his back, his spine fusion surgery. I mean, this is a hell of a comeback for him. I get it. You prefer Roger Federer. That's cool. A lot of people probably do. But to say you don't care about Tiger, that's nuts.
So let's go back to this, because I made the comparison to Federer only in the sense that if you want to talk about remarkable comebacks, he was on his way out in a sport where he was already over the hill by the time he started his decline.
Yep.
And he came back to be the world's best player and won more majors, more majors, not some rinky dink little outpost tournament.
Well, of course, he's won some of the Aussie Opens, and his last one, he didn't even face one.
I don't think you want to die on the hill of the Valspar Invitational versus Wimbledon. I don't know if you want to go out on that plane.
Yeah.
Anyway, point being is, it's not even just. You're right. Athletically, it would be amazing for him to come back. It really would. but just him as a person. When all of this happened with Elon back in the day, part of it made me feel a bit unseemly because someone's private life is their business. And there's a lot, like to your point, a lot of people do a lot of things. Doesn't mean we can't admire them at work. But certainly of that sort, because like that's not criminal. That's just like, look, if you don't want to be a faithful husband, I don't know. Is that really my business? Certainly not if you're a golfer.
Yeah.
Point being, the stories about his ego and his bitterness, and you know, and he's never tried to redeem himself. Like he's never become an interesting person. His story may be interesting, his situation may be, but he himself has never proven himself to be an interesting person.
Yes, off the greens, there is nothing interesting about him aside from his obsession with wanting to be a Marine. Wright Thompson did a great piece. I'll agree with you there. Who's easier to root for as a person? It's Federer. 100%.
And even let's take the comparison out of it because that maybe complicates things. People talk about how amazing it would be for Tiger to come back. And considering how great he was and the bottoms he hit physically, that's true. But for me to say all of a sudden the sport is saved because Tiger can come back and play again, I would have to care about Tiger. And I don't.
You're in the minority.
I think that's true.
You are absolutely. And by the way, that's fine. You are the outlier because, like, we were talking to this one golf guy on today, and he's like, yeah, I've got three more interviews before I take my kid to work or kids to school. That was the biggest thing that happened this weekend. The entire biggest thing for me, including Raptors, Leafs, whatever, was Tiger Woods' 44-foot putt on Sunday. And I'm not a golf head. You know, we almost never talk golf, but that for me was the biggest moment. It's interesting. You are the outlier, sir.
It's true. And maybe I will bring back the Federer comparison for just one moment. One of the things.
Shocking. By the way, we got 90 seconds.
Yeah, you know, okay. All right. One of the things that made his climb back up to the top so impressive was his change of attitude, how he discovered the love of playing again and how he just wanted to live in the moment and not choke himself out of joy. If those words ever spill out of Tiger Woods' mouth, I will apologize immediately and profusely. But all I've ever heard from him is petulant whining, blaming others for his problems, yelling at his subordinates, and I'm not going to root for him to come back and become a cultural icon because he's kind of pissed that opportunity away, at least as a human being, if not a golfer.
Here's my final thought on Tiger. Tons of viewers were pissed off at Jason Reed for wearing a shirt that was similar to Tiger's in color because it confused. Like, wait, is that Tiger? No, it's Jason Reed. Get that color off your shirt.
Matt, if you want to support Tiger Woods, four words, making golf great again.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Shame on you, Bob.
It's the cult of personality.
Oh, you hack.
It's the cult of personality.
Going the easy way. All right, Bob, so we will chat on Friday because you're making Muskoka great again, going up cottaging up in Deerhurst. Bob, I want you to enjoy your elitist vacation. See you on Friday.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.